We are going to be getting a presentation from National Treasury on the division of revenue, and as well as a response from the FSC on the division of revenue. So without, I think we agreed that the meeting will start at 2, and without any waste of time. Madam, can you close that door for us, please? Without any waste of time, I will immediately hand over to Mr. Kenneth Brown and the team to make the presentation.
Come in.
Mr. Brown, the floor is yours. Thank you very much. I will be co-chairing this meeting with Honorable Sokoni, as you are quite aware that this is a joint meeting. Over to you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. It is once again a privilege for us to come to the committee and just to present in quite a bit of detail the allocation for the 2011 Division of Revenue. I've got Wendy Fennell here, who is the chief director that is actually responsible for the division of revenue as well. And I've got Jan Hutton, who is responsible for municipal finance. So if there are any questions, because we didn't talk about your billing, your billing problems in municipalities, we're going to talk about it today. Right? And then we've got Dr. Blatcher, who is with health. And at the back here is our two lawyers, Stephen this side and Janine. So they helped us to facilitate the entire bill through the process. And we all know Nico at the back. Honorable Chair, we will be covering the bill, but we will also indicate to the committee the changes that we've made to the bill, but also some of the changes that we've made after we've tabled the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. Some questions were asked around certain things during that time, and we've amended this bill to be able to take into account a number of those changes. Basically, without further ado, I think I'll just move very quickly. The outline of the presentation is the legal basis for the Division of Revenue Bill, recommendations by committee on appropriation as they related to the 2011 Division of Revenue Bill. We'll look at the layout of the Division of Revenue Bill and the changes that we've made, basically, subsequent to the 2010 Division of Revenue Act. And then we'll go into quite a bit of detail on the FSC's proposals and how government is responding to those specific proposals. Then we'll delve into the allocations that, that inform the 2011 budget and show in detail quite the provincial and local government allocations. Now, Honorable Chairs, last year when we visited provinces to assist some of the chairpersons of the different provinces in the processing of the bill, one of the questions that came out at that at some of that was to say, the bill is relatively, the way we've structured it, you get the schedule, but you don't get a feel if I want to go to a municipality, what the allocation for those municipalities are. So you need to go all over the bill around it. What Jan and his team have done, and we will hand it out if there are provincial representatives here today, we'll give the Eastern Cape, Limpopo, each of them actually their allocation for their municipalities per municipality. So then we've actually streamlined it quite a bit like that. What we have also done, which we will hand out later in the, at the end of the meeting, is all of the allocations that will be going to provinces, for provinces, per province as well. So then it's easier to get it that way than to go and look for them in the bill. It will make life quite a bit easier. So that we will also hand out later on. Now, we all know that the Constitution and the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act requires the bill. It's a Section 76 legislation, which requires that both houses of Parliament must process the bill. And then we also are aware and mindful of the fact that the Money Bills Amendment Procedures and Related Act also impact basically on the bill. I won't go into detail in terms of that. We know what the impact of that now is. Now, When we tabled the 2010 MTBPS, the different committees also raised quite a number of issues and made recommendations to that. So I think it's prudent, before we get to the bill, to actually just show to what extent we've taken those recommendations actually into account. The first has got to do with effective monitoring and accountability instruments during budget implementation. What the committee has raised was that given the increase in the budget, the committee recommends that effective monitoring and accountability instruments be put in place for implementation during the budget. These recommendations are supported, and we continue to put in measures in place to make sure that these are the. You are aware we table on a monthly basis Section 32. In fact, we get Section 32 reports and Section 71 reports for municipalities and provinces, respectively, on a monthly basis. We publish them on a quarterly basis, and the format of those are quite extensive, which covers quite a number of areas of expenditure and revenue matters, basically. And we are always available when we are called upon by the different legislatures and parliament to be able to come and make presentations as it relates to that. I think what we could consider here to further support the work that the committee does is we could on a monthly basis, when we get the information, actually consolidate the information and just submit it to parliament, irrespective of whether we will publish it on a quarterly basis or not. So we could do that. To enhance further to support oversight. Then one of the issues on the saving side that the committee raised was provinces should come up with a detailed savings plan and promote value for money in their spending. And provinces and parastatals should reflect their amounts and areas of savings during their quarterly reporting. What we've seen in provinces, there was savings of about 13.3 billion rand during the MTF. I think what is important in your recommendation, which we don't reflect clearly here, and I think the team needs to apply their mind on, is to say, how do we possibly now Section 32 and Section 71 report start to put in a table that start to reflect if there are any savings made, and maybe start to reflect those specific savings as it relates to those respective spheres of government. We could consider putting that basically in there. But what we have done, the KZN, KwaZulu-Natal province, has actually done quite a detailed work around savings and austerity measures. What we've done, we've circulated the work that they've done to a number of the treasuries and asked them also to make sure that those measures are indeed implemented in other provinces as well. And on transport, the scholar transport policy, I think the committee indicated that the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Transport must actually review the current policy and address the challenges that are faced by learners who would be walking in long distances. This is under discussion between the two departments, and I think they need to report back to their respective portfolio committees, and I think it would be advisable that they actually report back to the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education as well as yourself on progress around that. Then address overdrafts that consume grants. What the committee recommended is that National Treasury must facilitate discussions with provincial treasuries and local government, provincial departments of local government, to address overdraft facilities that consume grant funds. Grants need to be better managed to ensure prudent spending and achievement of intended objectives. We agree as it relates to that. And actually, our monitoring system actually is quite a detailed monitoring system, where we know exactly how much funds are actually dispersed on a monthly basis, how much of the funds are actually expended, and hence we are in a position even to implement Section 16 to 20 of the Division of Revenue Bill to allow for the management, basically, of those specific funds. As it relates to infrastructure grants, we will talk about later on as well, because a large chunk of the slow spending relates to infrastructure grants. we will explain to the committee what we are also doing in terms of how we want to monitor infrastructure grants in the period ahead. The current budget format, as I've said, require that kind of reporting in any case. Then assessment of conditional grants, here what the committee has recommended that the national departments, together with the Treasury, must assess the performance of all of the conditional grants before introduction and prior to termination, basically. And more consultation would and oversight be performed by parliamentary committees prior to termination of some of the grants. In terms of the grant framework, in any case, all of the grant frameworks actually require that is it 5 months after the end of the financial year that a detailed assessment of conditional grants be done and the performance of that needs to be actually tabled in Parliament. As I've indicated, there are additional reporting requirements that we're also going to introduce for infrastructure reporting. I'll touch on that later on because that will also help you with assessment of the grant, its performance, and also enhance your oversight. On Department of Energy and Environmental Affairs, they should address the backlog in water and sanitation for schools. There, we've heeded to the call that the committee has put forward. We're adding $8.2 billion in the new budget to address the issues around on the school infrastructure side, which is holistic in terms of the backlog there. But also we've added funding on the infrastructure side for clinics as well. So we've taken that into account and we'll show it to you later on. Department of Health to consider moratorium on vacancies. Here the committee recommended that the Department should reconsider its moratorium on vacancies and other outstanding issues which will eventually enable it to address capacity issues. Yeah. I think we came through quite a tough transition period. In 2009 and 10, provinces overspend their personnel health budgets extensively. This trend is projected to continue in the current financial year, which ends the end of March, but not to the extent at which it has happened in the previous year. What we have indicated to provinces, and I think the minister also alluded to it this morning, is that we need to have quite a better handle on our administrative staff, not only in health for that matter, in all of provincial government, so that more funds be set aside and employment be taking place at the frontline services. It's better to employ more teachers and doctors than to employ quite a large chunk of administrative staff, basically there. And further recommendation there is that the Department of Higher Education and Training should continue to improve quality levels of qualifications obtained for further education and training institution, and the House adopted that. That is supported, and I think this morning's discussion as well, the issue around the performance of FT colleges actually came up, basically again, and the steps that the National Minister of Higher Education will be taking to make sure that the FET college system works, and also that the interrelationship between that and our skills development strategy as a holistic needs to be taken into account there. So as it relates basically to those recommendations, these were supported there. The next recommendation relates to ECD. National Treasury should introduce a grant for ECD for National Department of Basic Education to ensure that ECD is prioritized as one of the key functions of the National Department of Basic Education. Here we agree that ECD needs to be supported. And if we look at spending trends, we see that this function has increased through the equitable share from 1.6 billion rand in 2009 and 10. In fact, if we step 3 years back prior to that, I think it was just under 400 million in about 2007 and 2008. Right? It has grown to about 1.6 billion in 2009 and 10, and it is projected to grow to 3.4 billion by 2013-14. Given the investment trends that we start to see in ECD, I think at this stage, I don't think we would want to introduce a conditional grant to specifically deal with that, because we can see through our budget format, the way we've structured it, we can clearly see a line of investment that actually is going towards ECD. On universities to be established in Mpumalanga and Northern Cape, this, I can remember, it was quite a heated debate in the committee when we presented the bill last year. This year, 300 million has been set aside in the, over the next over this MTF for the establishment of these universities. So the Department of Higher Education and Training will be responsible for the building of those facilities. The next contentious issue related to the review of the provincial equitable share formula, and there was a recommendation by the committee that we must make sure that senior officials of provinces get involved in the review of the equitable share formula. So what we've had quite senior officials from both national and provincial levels. They formed part of the task team working on health and education components, and progress is regularly reported to the TCF and the Budget Council. And the review of that formula, we've workshopped you on it, and we will quickly just run through it, not getting into much of the details basically today. The other recommendation was to introduce a special grant to build capacity at generally poor municipalities. The view was that we need to put support mechanisms in place to identify and support all municipalities that are 100% dependent on conditional grants. Yeah. And the National Treasury or government must consider introducing a special grant for such purposes. Now, currently, substantial resources firstly are directed to the local government equitable share to support poorer resource municipalities, which are continued in the current MTF. We can safely say no municipality is 100% dependent on grants. And we've got quite a number of conditional grants that are earmarked to build specific capacity in municipalities. You've got the financial management grant, you've got the municipal systems improvement grant that is in place, and all of that is also supported through the Siyanda-Manje capacity building program. We also have quite a bit of donor funding that we're setting aside to support municipalities as it relates to that. So we are of the view that we don't have to introduce a special conditional grant around it. What we have done with a local government equitable share formula as well, we have reworked the institutional component to allocate quite a bit more funds towards smaller municipalities, and they could use that for those funds to employ critical skills, in any case, in those municipalities. The National Treasury should engage with the FFC and StatsSA on data used in the equitable share formula for municipalities. This recommendation is noted and is supported. I think our concern, and it remains a concern for all of us, is the fact that the census data is collected on a 10-year kind of period. So we will engage with the Department of with StatsSA to make sure intermittently, you know, in 5 years, over a five-year period, how do we organize the sample sizes and in numerator areas that they actually use in the current census. How can we use that to make sure that we can actually update the formula on a more regular basis going forward there? Then the other recommendation relates to that overall expenditure of government needs to be at 50% at the end of the second quarter. That was one of the recommendations that the committee has made. It will be difficult to put this in as a rule, because if you think about it, if you take capital, some projects may move faster, some may move slower, you know, on personnel things. So it is rather difficult to have quite a bit of a hard and fast rule that says. But what we do, in any case, in our monitoring, we just use it as a soft benchmark just to give us an indication where spending actually is. Then on the special purpose vehicle that the Department of Corporate Governance has embarked on, the committee indicated that there needs to be further consultation, basically, around it. So the Department of Corporate Governance has actually consulted extensively on it, and they are looking at a different delivery model for support for municipalities as it relates to infrastructure. Once that is finalized, we will be able to come back to you and give you an indication of how that is going to look like moving forward. Underspending on health conditional grants, the Department of Health should investigate reasons for underspending of grants and discourage tendency of returning funds to National Treasury. This works against the plan to transform our health institutions. So we agree. In fact, we even go further and say we shouldn't actually only restrict it to health conditional grants. We should actually talk about the entire conditional grant system, basically. Now, I'll ask Wendy to possibly just go through some of the changes that we've made to the bill. Wendy, I'll talk it for you.
Thank you very much. What we'll do is we'll just focus on slide 13, and the importance here in the slide is just indicating exactly what the bill consists of, and the bill consists of the actual clauses, which contains the details and what national transferring officers must do, for example, what receiving officers must do, and related clauses. Then attached to the bill as well as the schedule. In the schedule, what you'll get is the different types of grants, and in that it will indicate the purpose of the grant as well as the breakdown per province and the like. The only allocation with respect to local government that's broken down is the equitable share. All the other allocations do not form part of the bill. It forms part of an appendix to the bill. And the next slide then does is just to indicate what is contained in the appendices. And that contains quite a lot of information. And in addition to that information, Jan has prepared on the local government slide a breakdown per municipal allocation for a municipality. And we've also got a breakdown for all the conditional grants per province, which would make oversight so much easier. So that is also available to further assist the parliamentary processes to do the oversight role. When the actual act gets published, all the tendencies fall away, and just the main core of the bill remains. Then with regard to the amendments to the 2010 Division of Revenue Bill, a lot of changes have actually been made to actually complement some of the reforms that's been made to the fiscal flows that flow to provinces and municipalities to actually respond to those changes and enable the system to function better. In order to do that, we had to eliminate a number of clauses. For example, we've deleted the clauses that deal with accreditation, and we've also deleted all clauses, and that's the clause that dealt with vermins and the like. The whole clause in that respect was also deleted. And it will be replaced with new clauses, and I'll be taking you through those new clauses. We've also had a number of amendments in the fiscal system that we had to respond to, which I'll also take you through. The infrastructure grant to provinces will not continue in 2011 budget. It will be replaced with three specific sector grants, and that is specifically done to better respond to the actual planning, budgeting, maintenance, and the like, and actual executing of projects, and I'll take you through that detail as well. There's also a new conditional grant that's been established. Kenneth already alluded to that. That's a new grant in kind to accelerate addressing the backlogs that we currently find in schools. And then there's also specific clauses to deal with two new grants that's been introduced to specifically respond to the immediate costs and that's incurred after disaster happens. The new clauses that's been introduced, there's a number of clauses that's been introduced to improve national oversight over conditional grants. What we often hear is that national departments come to these committees and complain that they don't, you know, it's difficult for them to execute their mandate. So we've made a number of reforms there. One of the first reforms that's quite important, in the past, it wasn't possible for Department of Health to withhold two specific conditional grants, namely the Health Professional Training and Development Grant and the National Tertiary Services Grant. Because those grants are specifically linked to service delivery and the funding of key medical services, We cannot make it an open-ended provision that funds be withheld, but the provision made that at least the national department can play its oversight role without negatively impacting on service delivery, and therefore a maximum of 5% is established. So it will strengthen the hand of national without having adverse impact on service delivery. What has also been added is, in the past, when a local government competition grant was withheld, it was only the provincial treasury and the national treasury, as well as that were informed. This provision has been extended to also consult the provincial department of local government, because it's often the department of local government would know what's going on in the individual municipalities, so it will just ensure, again, improved oversight. In the past, an equitable share, a conditional grant allocation could be withheld, but there's always a process in place to allow the municipality or the province to actually say these are the reasons why the funds should not be withheld and how it will adversely impact on services. There was a provision in the past that the National Treasury could shorten that period, but that wouldn't necessarily be fair, because it wouldn't give a receiving officer the necessary sufficient time to respond. So it's actually now been strengthened to say that the period cannot be less than 7 days, which is also quite an important change. Then there's been a number of reforms to the infrastructure grant funding to provinces. As I indicated before, the infrastructure grant to provinces has been reformed, and there's now three separate sector conditional grants. But that's not the only reform that's been made. There's been a number of reforms made to ensure specifically better spending, better infrastructure being delivered. So in order to ensure that provinces are required to submit lists of infrastructure projects for education, health and roads for the budget period, in line with infrastructure delivery improvement principles, which contains the whole cycle of infrastructure delivery, which must be gazetted by the transferring national officer. And that is very important, because that information can be made available to committees to actually look at where you'll have the amounts per project, and that will also strengthen oversight to actually see whether the actual projects are actually delivered on the ground. And that will take away also the flexibility to swap projects around mid-year without having sound reasons for that. And those allocations are going to be gazetted. And if those steps are not taken, the allocation can also be withheld. And then there's also a grant in kind extended to provinces. And what is different here is that the allocation in the past, a grant in kind provision was made for municipalities. This is the first time it's been extended to provinces. What happens is, instead of the money going to a province, the money is retained by the national department, in this case the National Department of Basic Education. What then happens is that the National Department of Basic Education will work with institutions such as Development Bank and to actually assist the process of fast-tracking the rollout. You can have a much bigger rollout in that regard, and that will enable fast-tracking of the eradication of the backlog of schools.
If I can just, Chair, with your permission, ask the members to turn to page 354 of the bill, if they've got the copies of the bill. Because there we've got a proposed format of the different projects that need to be listed, basically. So you'll have a list of that, say, for education. And in education, you need to specify where you're going to build new schools, basically, right? The name of the school, the number of classrooms, and quite a bit of detail. When do you expect to start? When do you expect to finish? The program name, the total cost of the program, where is the money? And all of that. So what could be useful, because it came up in the amendment when we were talking about the Division of Revenue Bill amendment, right, this issue came up. So we will be having this. What would be useful is for the committee later on in the deliberations to give us input and say, will this help you, won't it help you, and then we can basically just refine it before we finalize.
Thank you. Then Okay, and then work is underway to fast track the housing accreditation. And in order to respond to that, a number of changes also were made to the Division of Revenue Bill. What's important here, and that's one of the reasons why we removed the current provision and actually strengthened this, because you get different levels of accreditation. You get a level one accreditation, which gives a municipality certain responsibility. It's only if a municipality gets full accreditation, or referred to as level three accreditation, that the funds also flow directly to the municipality. It's then, in actual fact, the function is fully devolved then and becomes a responsibility of the municipality. Currently, we have no municipality that's fully accredited, but it is the intention over the short and to medium term to actually get this process fast-tracked. In order to actually ensure when it happens that the money can go directly to the municipality concerned, the provisions in the legislation has also been changed. So what will happen, for example, the province will get the money in terms of the human settlements grant, which is in line with the fact that no municipality has yet been accredited. But should it happen mid-year, the money would automatically, for that portion of, not the full allocation, except that everything is fully delegated, that portion that's linked to that municipality that's accredited at level three, that money will be redirected by the national department directly to the municipality, which is quite critical because that will give the levers to the municipalities concerned to actually put it as part of their budget, know exactly when they get the transfers, and that will be taken off then the provincial allocation. And then another important reform to actually again plan for the accreditation that's underway, but it's also linked not just to the accreditation process, but the roles that's given to municipalities to actually have integrated service delivery rollout, have control over the land management usage and the like, and link all services that need to be integrated, such as housing development, public transport and the like, and get these largest towns to think in an integrated way. A portion of the human settlements grant will also now in future be directly allocated to municipalities as well. And the mixed cities have been reformed, as well as a portion of the human settlement grant into one new conditional grant that's referred to as the urban settlements grant, and it will now be in future be administered by the Department of Human Settlements. It's one of a number of reforms underway to actually build the type of cities that's able to respond to large-scale migration, the need for large-scale infrastructure investments and the like, and to ensure that with overall infrastructure, the focus is on there rather than on piecemeal type of interventions. Then another very important development that Scope 4 is in the legislation is a new type of grant has been established. It's known as the Schedule 9 grant. And it will function differently to other grants. And it's specifically put in place to respond immediately after a disaster has been declared. And it will be made available 3 days to 3 months after the disaster has happened. And it's the short-term immediate interventions that's needed, where the funds, the processes will be changed slightly to allow that the funds, instead of first being appropriated, immediately being released to either the municipality or the province concerned. And what will happen then, the gazetting of that allocations will be done within 28 days of the transfers. The other normal reporting requirements will still apply to the grants. The only difference is that the money don't have to wait for appropriation, which can actually be too late for municipality or province to respond to a disaster. Then a number of additional clauses have also been added to deal with some of the complexities with regard to the expanded public works incentive grant, because what happens is you will earn in certain types of incentives based on your thresholds that you've been met, but it could happen that you've earned the thresholds and the incentive allocation within 1 year, but it can only be released in the next financial year. So those types of provisions have been catered for. And then there's also provincial specific provisions that have been added. In the past, we've also had certain complaints that provincial departments or sector departments are indicating they are aware of the fact that the funds have been transferred from the national department responsible for the function, but it hasn't reached the provincial sector department because it's flowed by the provincial treasury. So there's been some clauses added there. But there could also be very specific reasons why provincial treasury is not transferring the money. It could be a case that there's already funds transferred for conditional grant, but the spending is taking very slow. So it would not be the right thing to transfer it. So there's both the positives and the negatives in there to ensure that if a province is delaying the transfer unnecessary, it can be forced to transfer the money, but if there's valid reasons, the money can still be withheld. And then certain specific municipal provisions have also been made, and that deals with the re-demarcation. After the municipal elections, we'll have a different configuration of municipalities. It's just to ensure that money can still be continued to spend. And it's old clauses that every time it's put back when there's either provincial re-demarcation or municipal re-demarcation. Then another important development as well. In the past, what happened is that because provinces, national government, and municipalities have different financial years, what will happen is that allocations are transferred by a national transferring officer, but it doesn't get recorded in the same way in the municipal budget, which makes it difficult for the Auditor General to actually determine whether the money has actually been spent. So with respect to Schedule 4 grants, which is a grant in kind, and also Schedule 6 grants, is that in the future it will be allocated in terms of the national financial year, but transferred in terms of the municipal financial year. That will improve that accountability. Okay. Then another critical part in the process is also annually the FFC submits recommendations for the 2011 MTF, and then government is required to respond to it and indicate to what extent it's incorporated or not incorporated in the budget in this year, the 2011 budget process. And we've had a number of consultations on this with the sector departments responsible that deals with specific of these issues. We've also had a number of interactions with on the technical level with the FFC. And it's also been endorsed for the government response by Cabinet. And one of the first chapters that deals with the global economic crisis, fiscal frameworks and coping with vulnerabilities, the FFC has made a recommendation that in the short term, government should continue to strive for fiscal consolidation and to focus on programs that demonstratively work better and ensure that funds are actually coordinated and directed towards access and improved service delivery. In order to do that, they made three recommendations. The first one is to continue the expansion of child support grants and old age pension grants, sustaining high levels of access to education and healthcare services, and then lastly, to reprioritize expenditure towards repairs and maintenance. And government is in full agreement with that, what the focus to date has been is that we focus on, within the current baseline, to secure savings on non-core expenditure and then direct the money that's available, as well as the money that's been freed up towards core government priorities that will actually focus on frontline services. The same applies to that to maintenance and repairs. It's extremely important and it's also supported. And the implementation of the YAMA will ensure that infrastructure assets are properly maintained. But even if you look at the current 2011 Division of Revenue Bill and the clauses that's been added to actually ensure that the plans are actually done and to comply with certain principles, and that those projects are reported on, will further support that takes place. Then another proposal that the FFC has made is that we move towards a block grant for education, health, and social development. and government does not support that proposal because the introduction of a block grant could potentially be seen as unconstitutional. So it can most probably not be effected without a constitutional change. And then another recommendation that's been made is to enable independent cost-effectiveness and quality review of both public and private education on health and social ways. And government supports that independent cost-effectiveness and quality reviews should be undertaken. And most probably the department that's best placed to do that is in the presidency, the department responsible for performance monitoring. And then the FFC made a number of proposals on social assistance reforms, and the majority of the recommendations made on the by the FFC supported, with the exception of one recommendation, and that is that projects be piloted, and that could be quite risky. If funds are released to individuals, on a pilot basis, it could create problems of exclusion, but it could also be difficult to retract from those that benefit after you've actually piloted it. So government do support pilot programs as a principle, and it's a very good way of testing programs before full rollout, but you must also be careful the type of, so that's the only concern that we've got with the proposal. And then with regard to a transparent intergovernmental fiscal system, which is contained in Chapter 3 of the FFC recommendations, again, it also highlights something that committees have also highlighted, is that when introducing and terminating conditional grants, national governments must introduce certain steps and processes before it gets done. And one of the key proposals made there is that grant performance should be monitored at the entry point, in the midterm of the grant, and at the end of the grant. And government agrees that there should be a stringent process of both introducing grants as well as terminating grants. And National Treasury has developed guidelines on how this should take place. And what is important here is that we actually build the capacity of all stakeholders involved in the process, both the national department that's responsible for the grant as well as the receiving municipality or province, so that we can actually have much better information also to inform the process. For example, often what you find problematic is that grants get suspended because it's not functioning well and not necessarily because there's not a need. But there's also certain cases where grants are introduced, for example, to support pilots and the like, where an entry assessment, for example, will not necessarily be appropriate because that whole pilot is actually there to inform future and full rollout. Another proposal made by the Commission is that government should make criteria available for the division of the grants so that it be transparent, and that also the key focus should be on performance rather than just grant spending. The criteria for grants are explained both in Annexure W1, which is contained in the Division of Revenue Bill, but also in each and every conditional grant framework that's also contained in the bill. And then with regard to the second proposal, it is supported, and a number of reforms are actually being done to actually ensure that we get there. But first, what is important that you actually build the systems in provinces and local governments and then progressively move along as you make progress. On the provincial side, we further advanced, where the focus is now shifted also to non-performance information. On the local government side, we're still busy with introducing systems to improve financial reporting, and the focus thereafter is to move also to non-financial information. And Durban with respect to Chapter 3. A proposal was made that we consider moving towards results-based accountability through introducing incentive grants. The recommendation is supported, but it's not a short-term proposal that can be supported. First, we need to build the capacity within province and municipalities to actually respond to that so that we can move towards that. Otherwise, it won't have the desired effect. What will happen is that municipalities, for example, with capacity would largely benefit, while municipalities with very little capacity would actually not be able to access these funds. Then another proposal made is that the budget allocation process must follow grant frameworks. That recommendation is supported, and that monitoring is taking place through Section 32 of the PFMA and Section 72 of the MFMA. Then quite a number of proposals were made with regard to revenue improvement and collection, and also what proposals on how it can be done. We've made quite a lot of progress to introduce improved financial management and reporting on local government side, and it's introduced through the budget format reforms that's contained in the municipal budget and reporting regulations. Regulations mean it's compulsory, so it's not optional. Jan can provide much more information on this if you're interested. And there's also, in addition to that, very sector legislation that also focus on revenue collection. For example, if you look at the electricity legislation, it will contain quite a lot of information on how municipalities must account for when they do, for example, the determination of electricity tariff. Then the last proposal is to look at the possibility of introducing a court or garnishee order. And in the short term, it will have benefits to focus on improving the billing system. The reason why municipalities are often under-collecting at this stage is because they don't have proper billing system in place, and there's still a lot of scope to actually explore that. But in the medium term, if necessary, the idea of creating a municipal debt court can be considered. And then a number of proposals were also made about, again, on the municipal revenue collection side. And the concern raised here is that there's often a statement made that certain municipalities are just unviable, and the Commission's strongly expressed concerns about that statement, that some municipalities will never be financially viable. And that proposal is supported, and maybe just to indicate why the proposal is supported as well. Yes, certain municipalities are much more reliant on transfers than others, and certain municipalities, you'll also find quite a lot of people staying within those municipalities that's very, very poor. But even if that is the case, there's very few municipalities where 100% of the municipality is poor, and even in those cases, there's quite a lot of benefit for municipalities to improve their own revenue collection through billing systems, through introducing property rate systems, because the great benefit that you've got there is you put the accountability then on the municipality, and the residents, if they don't receive the service or the community don't receive the service, they're saying, but we are paying for the services, and why are we not seeing the benefit? So it will never become like the main revenue source of those municipalities, but it's still critical, even when they're small and when they're poor, to actually build for their own revenue capacity. And then a number of proposals were made with regard to the local government equitable share, and a particular concern was expressed with regard to the RRC component. And a number of reforms have been made to the equitable share formula for the 2011 budget. I'll be taking you through at the later stage in the presentation on that, which includes also reforms to the RRC. And the issue here is not so much about the constitutionality, but it's rather about the actual effective functioning of the local government equitable share formula. And that's why a full-scale review will be undertaken of the formula during 2011 for implementation in subsequent budgets. The FFT also made a number of recommendations on the restructuring of the electricity distribution industry restructuring and the manner in which it's been dealt with. The government has since agreed that the restructuring of the electricity distribution industry into six regional electricity distributors will not be continued. So government response in this regard is not needed. Then with regard to Chapter 4, which deals and quite a number of recommendations are made on urban public transport, and this is quite a key development as well, particularly in light of the development of the National Land Transport Act that's been put in place last year, and which actually increasingly acknowledged the role that municipalities must play in public transport. And the first recommendation that the FFT made in this regard is that the focus be on the funding of corridors A and B of the National Rail Transport Plan. And the reason why those are supported is that those are where the actual priority funding should be directed. But the fiscal system has also been reformed, and the 2011 Division of Revenue Bill to actually acknowledge the increased role that's given to municipalities as well. The National Transport Act makes provision that the public transport function can be devolved to municipalities or individual municipalities. If that happens, the same as with the housing accreditation will happen is that the funds can be redirected to the municipalities concerned. It will be done in a slightly different process, but the principle is all the same. Okay, then there's also the issues raised about the Municipal Land Transport Fund. Again, that is provided for in the National Land Transport Act, and it makes provision that municipal-owned revenues, conditional grants, but also taxes be deposited in that fund. That is possible. And then thirdly, then if you can go to the next slide. And then a recommendation is made by the FFT that the current mechanisms and basis for distributing transport subsidies should be reviewed to promote efficiency of urban transport and land use issues. That's one, as I indicated earlier in my presentation, that's one of the reforms that's been introduced and the new human settlements grant has been introduced to get that integrated planning that focuses not just on housing but on connecting it with things like public transport and the like. Okay, then the potential financial implications of the promulgation of the National Land Transport Act on municipalities should be examined. And the majority, that is an issue that will be looked at. Funding has been allocated on the department, that National Department of Transport's budget for the implementation of the new piece of legislation. And what also needs to be done is to build the regulatory capacity as local government. And then as these functions are reformed and transferred to local government, so should the funds also flow from provinces to local government. And then the last recommendation by the FFT has to do with the National Department of Transport should regularly update the South African National Household Travel Survey, and that recommendation is fully supported, and money has been allocated on the Department of Transport budget for the 2011 so that they can actually update the survey. And that survey is critical in forming future expenditure.
Let me give you a break on it, Tyrone. Now let's turn to the fiscal framework for 2011 MTF. What we will do here is to give quite a bit of detail on the allocations that will be going to provincial and local government, and possibly just run through the formulas that actually supported there. The fiscal framework makes $94 billion available over the MTF, which includes the savings part, and of which 21 is reprioritization, and 9 billion is added to provide more resources for government's priorities. As the national government, 48.8 billion is added, provincial government, 30.1 billion is added to the equitable share, 10 billion to conditional grants, local government, 1.2 equitable share, 3.7 to conditional grant, and 300 million to the fuel levy to just augment for the two new metros that will be established immediately after the election, that's Mangaung and Buffalo City. So over the next 3 years, we are confident that these expenditures are channeled towards the 12 outcomes and are supporting the 5 priorities that are actually listed there. And a lot of the details as it relates to this is in Chapter 8 of the budget review, as well as in Annexure W1, which is contained in the Division of Revenue called as an annexure. So all of the detail is basically in there. This table just gives us just a summary of how those funds are actually then split up there. So they are also in chapter 8 and in W1. Then the key revisions, I mean, we've touched on this, how we split up the infrastructure grant, the introduction of the school backlog grant, the new human settlements, the urban settlement development grant that will be administered by the Department of Human Settlements, and the two conditional grants there, but the one for provinces for disasters there. So if we take all of those revisions, this is what the allocations per province would look like. Provinces would get their share of the equitable share, which is 288 billion, 69.4 billion for conditional grants, and that's the total that will be appropriated by provinces in the new year. I'll skip some of these slides because I think they got a gremlin must have come in. Let me just go to slide number 38, yeah, which shows basically the spending plans and how what those slides those would be basically covering there. The equitable share, the additions, basically the parts of it, as if you can remember, we had a salary increase of 7.5, and provinces budgeted for 5% last year for the carry-through impact of it. This covers just the difference between the 7.5 and that. There were pressures on provinces as it relates to OSD in education, the provision that's made for that. Then 1.7, 3.8, and 4.8 is also added to address pressures basically that are in health, but also to provide for specific other priorities. Mark later on will add to precisely where those allocations would go. There's a table, I think, which is the next slide, which actually just shows the revisions here in numbers. I think the first part we can just basically skip and go to the next one there, which shows the revision, which is 2 of 2. Here we show all of the funds that we've added to the different conditional grants. So agriculture gets an additional 500 million over the next 3 years, CAF 400 of that, and the land care program gets an additional 100 million. Corpus of Government and Traditional Affairs, which is the provincial disaster grant, the 675 million there. There the idea is once a disaster takes place and an area is declared a disaster area, immediate release of funding, obviously following the proper processes to be able to release that. FET colleges there is added the 1.75 billion. Part of the addition for FET colleges relates to partly modernizing, but I think to a great extent, a lot of the lecturers that are in FET colleges have been excluded in past years as it relates to OSD. This provides for that. Then on the health conditional grant, we're adding another 1.5 billion for HIV and AIDS, and another 1.5 billion for the NTSG. And on the property rate side, a further 2.2 billion is added to that grant. Then we're adding 3.4 billion rand to the provincial road infrastructure maintenance grant that we've actually introduced. The point that I've made this morning, that's the addition that we're adding there. Then we're adding 8.2 billion for school infrastructure backlog grant. What is important for the school infrastructure backlog grant, honourable chairs and members? This grant will only be in place for 3 years. After 3 years, there shouldn't be kids that are taught under trees in mud schools, etc. There shouldn't be schools without electricity and water. So This grant will be administered by the National Department of Education with the understanding that in the next 6 months, they should have all of their delivery systems in place so that we address all of the things. So I'm emphasizing it so that when members talk to the Department of Education nationally, they must come up with a clear plan on how this money is going to be spent. I think this is very, very, very kind of crucial. This matter was discussed in the T7 Budget Council quite extensively. Some provinces are feeling that they are being punished because they are doing the right thing by making sure that they are delivering schools. Then other provinces are not spending the money that they were given in any case in previous years to build these schools. Now we're continuing to add part of the money. And here I can mention those provinces. It's Eastern Cape, it's Limpopo. So I think this is quite... Yeah. The idea here is we need to just sort this out because we can't continue in that inequitable way of delivering services there. Right. Now, this table summarizes, once we've added all of those additions and revisions that we've made, this table just shows now what the conditional grant framework basically now look like all of those after all of those additions. Right. Now, we have explained the equitable share formula for you. If you look at Schedule 1 of the Division of Revenue Bill, it shows the total, I think, is it on page? Let's check to the page for you. It is on page 27 of the Division of Revenue Bill. What you're going to see there is the bottom line, which says 288.5 billion, 305.7 billion, and 323. This is the breakdown now per province, their share of those specific allocations that they get using the provincial equitable share formula that was done. Now, I don't know, Chair, we will be guided by yourselves because we've done quite an extensive presentation on the formula itself. I don't know whether you want us to continue basically with the presentation there, or we just leave it. If there are specific questions around it, we could answer those there. So because the next few slides would explain this in detail. I can leave it. But if there are specific, in any case, we will visit some of the provinces to explain specifics around it there. Wendy, you can quickly just conclude with the local government part.
Thank you. The same is done with regard to local government. It's on slide 53. It contains the additions made to the equitable share as well as additions made to the conditional grants to local government. And 168 million is added for this year. 339 million and then 678 million is added to actually ensure the sustainable delivery of basic services. The question that can then be asked is, it looks like quite a small contribution given the responsibilities that's placed on municipalities. But that needs to keep in mind that quite a lot of increases were given in past years. So the increase through the local government equitable share is still quite substantial. And then additional money has also been added. Can we just go to slide? The revisions of the fiscal framework, which is just to the next page, which contains then the details. You'll see this table has got pluses and it's also got minuses. The minuses are cases where shifts have taken place and the pluses is where additions have been added. And in certain cases, which is important here when you look at the table, for example, the mix of you are not a grant anymore, so that's why you'll see a negative. But that money, the money is actually increased because if you look at the additional increases, you can actually see under the urban settlement development grants, there are actually amounts listed there as well. So some of these just reflect the shift. The important section that to actually focus on is actually the additions to baseline, which is contained in the bottom half of the presentation, which indicates the money that's been added. Quite a lot of money has been added to the Urban Settlements Development Grant, which amounts to, 2 billion over the MTF period. Substantial additions have also been made to the public transport infrastructure and systems grant of $2.5 billion over the system. Then also money has been added to the rural transport services and infrastructure grant. Although it appears to be quite small, a very important development has taken place here. The grant is going to be refocused going forward. It's going to be extended to all district municipalities that's responsible for water and sanitation. And the focus is going to be on collecting data on the actual state of roads in those municipalities. And that will then enable that better system be put in place to fund those roads in rural areas. Currently, one of the biggest problems that you've got is that that information is just not available. So it's very difficult to strategically redirect the funds. So the grant is completely refocused. And that is actually learned out of the pilot when the grant was originally introduced. But that was ad hoc interventions. And the focus now is towards getting towards a system where we can have the information. And then that will also assist in determining how much funding must actually go to actually ensure that that area is addressed. Then a new grant has also been introduced, the Municipal Disaster Management Grant of $1.1 billion over the MTF. That municipal drought relief allocation is flowing from last year's budget that's directed to municipalities in the Western Cape to deal with the drought that they experienced there. And then another very important reform is the Financial Management Grant of $200 million that's been added there. That money is specifically earmarked towards interns and the appointment of interns, engineering and technical engineering interns, and it's all linked to ensuring that municipalities can actually build decent asset management systems. If you look at a lot of qualifications that's coming to municipalities through the audit reports, it's often you do not have decent asset management registers in place. And what will happen is young graduates will be appointed and they will be seconded, for example, to water board so that they can actually pick up the skills to actually do the maintenance, etc., of those type of assets and ensure that in future we move away from a situation where infrastructure are just completely neglected. Another important advantage there is that if they get subsidized or paid through the grant for 3 years, 3 years after that, they must still continue to work for the municipality concerned. So that will also assist in building the necessary in-house capacity for municipalities to do the service delivery that's required and actually maintain service. If you then look at the next slide, it contains a breakdown of the total allocations that go to municipalities. It contains the equitable share. What's important is just to look at the equitable share for 2007-08. It was $20 billion at this stage. If you look at the 2011-12 budget, it's increasing to 34%, which $34 billion, which indicates, and then the following year after that, it goes to $37 billion, which indicates that it's growing at quite a nice rate. If you then look at the general fuel levy, the amounts are also reflected there. It now needs to cater, like Kenneth pointed out, not for 6 metres, but 8 metres. And then the conditional grants are broken down in direct transfers and also indirect transfers. Indirect transfers is where the funds are retained at the national level, and then assets are, such as regional bulk, are established. If you then look at the next slide, that just contains the details per conditional grant, as well as the following then contains the capacity building grant.
We can skip what we've shown you now in terms of the tables. This is just explanation. That is, you can just talk to the changes to the equitable share formula.
The local government equitable share, which is one of the concerns that's been raised in the past, and it's particularly in the way that the equitable share is constructed, namely it's population-based, as well as the data concerns, which is also been highlighted in the recommendations during the MTBPS. Firstly, the census will take place this year, the 2011 census, which is a very important development. Unfortunately, it takes about 2 years, between 18 months to 2 years for that data to be available. So for the short term, unfortunately, we'll still sit with the challenge that we'll have to use 2001 data. We've made a number of reforms to ensure that the equitable share, on the one hand, progressively redirects additional resources to poorer resource municipalities, but not at the detriment of the larger municipalities, because they also need to deal with large influx of poor people in their municipalities as well. So another important issue with regard to the reform is you can't look at a component individually, because some of the components in the equitable share formula, such as the basic service components, actually benefit larger municipalities that because of that but large numbers of poor people, not necessarily in terms of percentage, in terms of the total population, but in terms of numbers. But if you look at the institutional component, which is directed at building basic administrative capabilities in municipalities, that will benefit largely poorer resource municipalities and smaller municipalities. And just to take you through some of the reforms that have been made, the basic services component has been changed. In the past, the basic services component looks at the number of poor living in a municipality. If you've got access to services, you get the full allocation. If you've got poor without access to services, you used to get a third of that allocation. What has now been done in the 2011 budget, that percentage has been changed. You now get a bigger allocation compared to previous years to acknowledge the fact that the census data is outdated, and that a number of those figures have now changed, where bigger number of poor people now have access to actual services as well. The benefit of this change will benefit largely poor municipalities, where they've only got large, or in 2001 terms, they used to have large backlogs in terms of percentages. A number of changes have been also been made to the institutional component. In the past, the allocation took into account the number of population that you had within a municipality, which largely benefited the larger municipalities. That component has now been taken off, and a pro-poor component has been introduced in the institutional component to enable that more resources be directed to smaller municipalities. A number of reforms have also been made to the revenue-raising component to address some of the concerns that the Financial Fiscal Commission has raised. One of the issues with a concern with regard to the stepped tariff approach in the RRC, that has been removed. We've also reduced the weighting of the revenue-raising component in the equitable share. That means it actually now takes less money away from municipalities as well. But importantly, and all these components, but including the RRC component, it will be taken forward in the bigger review that's been scheduled to commence in 2011.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I mean, this is where the presentation stops. The next slides are just what also happens at a national level. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brown and Wendy. There was quite a detailed presentation. Honourable members, it's now time for questions for clarity on the presentation. The first will be Mr. Babu, and followed by Honourable Makubela, Honourable Van Royen. Yeah, that's the question. You can hit them. Yes, Madam Marshall.
I wanted to just clarify the economic component of the formula. It has remained the same, and what is the impact on provinces like Gauteng? Because there is a sense that irrespective of whether some of the infrastructure and other things are there. We are a recipient of people from the rest of the country, the rest of the Southern Africa, the rest of the African continent, Asia, everyone, the United Nations in our province. And the fact that our economic development component is there. So we have been punished for contributing, for contributing, being assisted by other people to contribute over 30% to the GDP. I just wanted to get that issue. And she said then it will, there will be a bigger review in 2011. Is it for now, it remains the same, but there were those three components added. And then in this financial year, there will be a bigger review. That's clarity on that issue. And by the way, all political parties are united on that. And we're not saying other people should not benefit, but the reality is that you can't have a housing target in our province. The more you build, the more people come. And what is the impact of that in terms of other provinces?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just worried about this statement, which says 2001 data has been used. What is the effect of that, the old data? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like clarity on slide number 6. That has to do with review of scholar transport policy. Because this has been going on for some time, I think, and the response is just, to me, another delay, as if we could be saying this is what is happening, because these two departments really don't serve the needs of the children who have to be at school at the right time through their arguments. If we could be getting something more on top of that, that we as National Treasury feel this is what should be happening. If they're arguing, you tell National Treasury that this competence lies in basic education and it's over, so that we shouldn't be hearing all these stories every time. And the bill and the provinces, I wish it can come out here, because it's that sometimes they can't spend their 50%. It's just that I didn't mark the page here. We shouldn't expect them to use the 50% at the end of the second term, whereas the bill is being enacted after engagement with the recipient of the transfer and the people who have agreed that by this time we'll have submitted 1, 2, 3, so that at the end of the second term, in other words, the right amount of money could have been used. I think that those are my concerns. Another one you've already answered, and bullet number 17, too, if I can just get clarity on slide number 17, clarity on bullet number 3. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope the debate and the discussion on the equitable share formula in relation to the cost of service and the foreign national, the impact that that has on provinces. I hope that one is still going on, because I think I raised it at the previous meeting and I'm still not satisfied with the response that I got. But I don't want to raise it here today. That discussion is still going on. Chairperson, the question that I've got and the concern that I've got is on the infrastructure grant, the three-sector conditional grant. Now, my understanding is that the formula that they use there is 40-40-20. 40 goes to health, 40 to education, 40 to road. Now, I just want to find out from Treasury is how is that cast in stone? Because it definitely disadvantages the Free State. Because, as you said, you know, when it comes to education, we have done what we are supposed to do. Our priority is not in education to build new schools. We've done that. We haven't got schools under trees. We have done that. But our priority is our roads. And if we are now get restricted to the 40-40-20 formula, it will really impact on us. So I just want to know how is this cast in stone, or can is there a leverage on that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to understand the three-year school infrastructure allocation, whether it is based on the actual number of schools identified by province. Because when you say it's only 3 years and nothing thereafter, it seems to suggest that you are dealing with the exact number of math schools identified. I know as a province we did, you know, a presentation to National Treasury, because we even wanted to partner with the private sector, but your intervention, you know, is appreciated. But I just want to check whether you have funded according to what we presented to you. Secondly, the issue of the rural roads. You seem to be saying you don't have information. And as far as I know, a research was done by the Department of Transport to identify the access roads and the district roads and so on. I don't know whether you don't have that information, so that if you don't have that information, we can liaise with the department, because they did a detailed study of the access roads and they produced a report. So I wonder whether it's just specific provinces or just a general trend that you don't have data on the rural access roads.
Chair, on slide 26, it says the government resolved not to continue with the restructuring and establishment of the rates, which was a very good decision, by the way. But I just want to know whether Treasury can help us. The staff that was employed by EDI Holdings, as well as the officers, et cetera, are they still there? What has happened to them, and who's financing them, and what's going on there, please, as far as that's concerned?
Thanks, Chair. Mine is on the OSD. Whilst the intervention is welcome, I just wanted to check as to do we then also take into account the carryover? Because at times you find that you take it for granted that the provinces have got a plan in terms of carryover. Particularly now they're not able to deal with the OSD itself. Are we then able to make sure that they do plan, but also have that baking in terms of the carryover, so that we don't necessarily burden them in terms of the OSD itself? And secondly, is in terms of the new clause for the 2010 Division of Revenue Act. I'm not sure in terms of the maximum of 5% that you withhold, as to what impact would it have in terms of a province, because immediately if a province is not spending, it's already disadvantaged, you know, withholding that 5% as maximum. I'm not sure what would be the impact, you know, if there is no other mechanism that would actually go with that. I don't see what impact that will have on that grant. Thanks.
A rider to what Honorable Matomela has actually alluded to regarding to the allocation which is meant for math schools. I would want to go further and say there are schools that have just been recently affected by disasters. And also there are math schools who have been there. There are math schools
that cannot be used altogether. And there are more schools that are much better than other structures that are there. So I want to check, because APA, we must not come out as members of these committees and pronounce to communities and maybe create legitimate expectations. Then the 3 years is just around the corner. You know, when we were looking at the Eastern Cape, one of Matomela has correctly put the appreciation that the intervention is actually welcomed. But I want to satisfy myself around this, that do you really mean what you say? And the other issue is around the allocation to the new metros, like the Buffalo City. Is there any allocation that has been meant for newly established metros? And then there was something around the adjustment on teacher remuneration. Can I get clarity around that? The treasurer has actually spoken around that, the adjustment on teacher remuneration. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Really, just a follow-up on the schools, that 8 billion that we talked about there. I wanted to understand it a little bit also in terms of 3 years. Yes, we will discuss the matter with the education deferred, but I just want to understand the from treasury in terms of the rand and cent. The kind of, is a projection on today's rent or is a projection over the outer year? I just, what informed the 8 billion and that's at the Gallatin fall at the third year, irrespective of what would have been happening at or whatever results you produce. So I just want to understand that on the roads, I think the issue about the management of provincial government and the grant, I think is also a good thing. That it shows that cooperative government. But I just also don't, I want to understand the class of road that is involved in here. We can also engage with the Department of Transport in more detail. But if a grant, it must be based on what has already been submitted as a need, based on an assessment. Is this assessment of 10-year lifespan that you calculated was at 15 years. Just to understand how do you get to the rand and cent in terms of the kilometers that you need to repair or rehabilitate. The last one, I did ask this question earlier, in the earlier session, that's a function, a budget follow function issue. And I issue about the metros and issue about the public transport and the rail and so on. Now, currently you still have the challenges of the capacity that is mentioned in terms of existing function. So budget following function, in terms of it, I think that the little bit of detail about it, I think it will be useful for us to be able to say, if you do the oversight on something that you have and you understand. I mean, it links with the new metros, because new metros fall will be in the new financial year, and of course you say you will, some function will be devolved there. So if you could, or will, you can indicate, we will look at a thick book, where we'll get the actual detail of what's going to happen. Now, this is an interesting point, particularly the metro, the function of metros, and the Buffalo City comes in. Particularly the Eastern Cape, I'm just wondering to understand that public transport, the challenge of public transport, insofar as the metro is concerned, in the treasury engagement together with the transport, the rehabilitation is a rehabilitation budgetary plan. Even if it's over the third year, over the MTEP period, is there such a discussion in terms of public transport and making sure that there's accessibility in the movement, that moving South Africa strategy. I just want to understand that in the budgeted term, but I mean, the detail you can always engage or have a conversation with the department or visit the Department of Transport Committee. But I'm asking money, planning money from Treasury Fund.
Chair, on slide, I think it's the provincial conditional grants to provinces. I think it's slide number. It's the table W1-15. They say in the year 2010-2011, 513 million has been budgeted for community library services, and it goes up to 543 in 2011-12, 571 in 2012-13, and 602. Now, Chairman, my considered opinion is that you can never negate the importance of library services as one of the key elements for education and upliftment and so forth. I'd just like to have the view of the officials whether this is adequate or whether we've underspent in this regard, because my considered opinion is that we should prioritize this particular library service and see if it's not possible to spend more, because the long-term consequences of that is immense, Chairman. And I'd just like to have the views of the officials. Thank you, Chair. I think it's the provisional grants, one of two. It's I don't think that the slide is marked, Chair, but it's on. I can't see the table where it's marked, but it's table W1-15, conditional grants to provinces 2010-11 to 2013-14. Thank you, Chair. Chair, that's most probably on page 43. 43. It's 43. Should I have a look at that, 43, please? 41. Sorry, that's 41.
Can I go ahead, Chair? Thank you. Thank you, Chair. On page 30, or is it slide 30? Yeah, slide 30, I think. I'm looking at the principle that has been established here with respect to expenditure and its main focus. Now you have isolated five areas here: job creation, education, health, and so on and so on. Five of them, the main focus. Now I'm looking again at slide 36, which would mean the upper slide is slide 35. Now the clarity I seek here is whether the equitable share allocated to education was 51% in 2010. If in 2010 it was 51%, I would like to understand why in slide 44, under outcomes of review, we say under bullet 2 that education has been allocated 48%. What I would like to understand whether this was a downgrading on the allocation for education or not. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. And also thank you for the thorough presentation by Treasury. On page 140 of the budget review, referring to the questions that were asked and the recommendations made by the Select Committee on Appropriations, referring to the capacity interventions to be made in local government, local municipalities. The point is, Section 154 of the Constitution refers to the role of national and provincial departments
to assist local municipalities to deliver on their specific mandates. Money is allocated for capacity building, billions of rands. The point is that we will have to focus more on our oversight to call these national and provincial departments in terms of Section 154 to see did they comply with the Constitution. Secondly, what is happening at grassroots level in terms of the allocations made as indicated in the DORA. And the type of reports that has been sent from municipalities to Treasury just indicating figures, but you don't see anything behind the figure. That we get more detail regarding the spending. That also links up with page 143, address overdraft facilities that consume grant funds. That we will have to put our focus more on in these areas. Then regarding school transport chairperson and schools, we must point 10 fingers to ourselves. We are allocated and deployed, doesn't matter which political party you belong to a specific geographical area. And it's expected of every one of us to visit also the schools. And I would say three times a year, beginning, middle, and end of the year. Middle of the year to see if all the school books have been ordered, because that's supposed to happen in July and August, to be delivered in December before the school closes. The department's doing it in their own way. It's a circuit manager's job to go and do it. But they don't like to travel on gravel roads. I speak of experience in my constituency. I've got 400 kilometers of gravel roads, 15 schools, and the books are delivered on time. So we as members of parliament have a role to play. The same that when it concerns access roads to towns, to schools, doesn't matter which institution. That we inform that the specific MEC in that province immediately. It's a phone call away from you. Don't wait for a committee meeting or sending a letter. It lands up on someone's desk and they gather dust. So the focus is on us to go and do our oversight focus. Thank you, sir.
You're asking me a pleasure to answer. No, we're still going to ask. Okay, thank you very much, Chair. My question is around just a few questions. One, it's around the accreditation. Where is the process now of accreditation? Otherwise, this year, are there any municipalities that are going to get some allocation or what? Two. It's just a general comment around the implementation of OSP. Maybe Mr. Bacha can also comment. There was a problem, I think, that was identified in the health sector around the implementation of OSP. Because it seems that everybody, or maybe most categories, which were not supposed to benefit, but also benefited, and as a result, it created problems in terms of ballooning the budget of OSP in health specifically. Another comment that I have, one is the issue of it was raised earlier in the earlier session, Chair, around the sporting facilities, you know, in disadvantaged areas. And then I didn't get Mr. Brown very well, where he was saying, he did explain, but I couldn't understand what he was saying. But also,
it's an old, what you call, debate and discussion that we have had as to, does MIG consist of a component of a sports facility, what you call, infrastructure, for example? And if so, what is the percentage of that? Also, I think that perhaps maybe there is a need to really review that part, because I'm sure we all know sitting here that in the black areas there are no sporting facilities, whether it's at schools or generally anyway, they don't exist. And even the new schools that are being built, they don't have the, what you call, sporting facilities. Now, someone says, no, it lies in the MIG or elsewhere. Where is it exactly? Sure. Maybe the last chair, it's around the new grants. I think we appreciate the new grants that perhaps have been introduced this year. But the issue is, now, next month it will be the beginning of the financial year. How far are those departments that have received these new grants, how far are they in terms of planning? Will they be able on 1st of April to hit the ground running? Maybe I should stop there.
Okay. Thanks, honorable member. Just last two clarities, Mr. Brown and your team. I just want to check if this grant that will deal with the backlog on schools, if it will also address those challenges of those schools that operate from within other schools, those that platoon, because I don't hear those being mentioned anyway. And I have also picked up some differences between your slight response to committee recommendation and those that are contained in the budget review document. It's quite a few of them, but let me cite one example, the example relating to universities in Northern Cape and Mpumalanga. In your presentation, you're saying there's money already and you put a figure, but in the document there's no mention of any money. So I would like to know which one is which, and whether I'll be correct to assume that the money you're referring to will be there in the budget for higher education, or where does it appear? And, those were the two. So you can respond, and I must indicate, honorable members, I'm not going to allow follow-ups because of time. Thank you. There's only one edition I'm allowing now, Honorable Sokoni.
Thanks, Chair. I think that we appreciate, Chair, the response of the National Treasurer in terms of where there is a committee, where there is FSC. I think they are very clear. However, what I don't understand is that FSC, for instance, will soon be coming to the committees to present to us their recommendations for the following year. We comment. I'm not sure whether these comments do find their way to yourself. And if they do, whether National Treasurer does respond, for instance, to those what you call the comments that the committees would make, for instance, whether they agree or disagree with other recommendations by FSC. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Matumela, let me be lenient.
No, Chair, because you are not going to allow me to follow up on the question. My question is linked to this one. If you take Umdantane with Buffalo City, the infrastructure there is just dongas. There are no roads. They were stuck. It's just dongas now. So this is the question related to Buffalo City.
as a metro. So have you, I'm not just talking about Buffalo City, I'm talking about other, you know, cities. These old cities, that is the second biggest township in South Africa. But it's a shame when you go to them. So I don't know whether you have applied your mind so that you can deal with that, you know, specifically. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and members of the committee. Thank you for these very important questions. I will try as far as possible with my team to respond to them as detailed as possible. The first question around the economic component, it will be interesting to know what the response is of the more rural provinces, because the formula works like this. You've got 288 billion rand. If you adjust the economic component, obviously it means the rural provinces will have less money because you shift money actually to the more urban provinces. But let me just respond to your question, sir. This has been an ongoing debate for some time, for a number of years now. The key issue here that we keep on asking the province directly, in terms of the functions and powers that are assigned to the province constitutionally, right, how much of those are directly related to economic development becomes quite a pertinent issue, right? If you look at Gauteng as a province, for example, you've got quite a large amount of funds that have been spent on its road infrastructure by national government. It could be on a user pay principle, but funding has been spent for it. National government is spending close to, I think, 12.5 billion rand on the Gautrain in the province, which actually benefits the province alone vis-a-vis the rest of the other provinces. If we go to the debate of economic activity itself, more the municipality's role and responsibilities are the ones that contribute more to economic activity than what the province actually needs to do in terms of its powers and functions, if you think about it in that way. Right? Now, the rationale around keeping the economic activity component was to say there is some element that provinces play a role in as it relates to economic activity, and they need to be compensated, and hence retaining it at, I think it's at the level of 1% in the formula to be able to compensate that. Because if you quantify the entire budget of the province, you get to the conclusion that they contribute, but not to the extent that sometimes the province overstated to be the case, basically. There. Then the second question that actually comes into place there is, now before I even get to it, if you think about it, your role for, say, Blue IQ and all of those, right? Those are small contributions that actually the province is making relative from its contribution to be able to finance for economic activity in the province. Mr. Makubela, you're talking about the 2001 census data. I think in our presentation we alluded to the fact that it is a great concern for us for the local government equitable share formula to still use 2001 census data. As I've indicated to you, we've got the next census data that comes up here. Government will have to start to take a decision as to, you know, for the state of development where it is, must we have a census every 10 years, or should we have it more kind of regularly? It's a decision that we have to actually review and rethink about. But even in the absence of that decision not being taken, we also need to engage that essay as to how it needs to structure its questionnaire in such a way that the subsequent data sets that they release, like the October household survey, the mid-year estimates, etc., that they can be updated based on municipal per municipal level. But even that is quite a bit problematic given the sample sizes and all of that. So there is a bit of a tricky question around the 2001 census data, but we are alive to the question that you are raising. Honorable Mashiro, I think the issue around the school scholar transport issue is an issue that you say we keep on passing the buck. And I think indeed you are actually correct, basically, in that what actually just needs to happen is for the Department of Basic Education to get a sense of the movement of its pupils. It must have its learner demographics
It must fully understand those. And based on what it understands its learner demographics to be, have a transport plan that really just supports it. It's immaterial whether it is for the Department of Transport or the Department of Basic Education. But ultimately, the Department of Basic Education should take the full responsibility to be able to move with it. I think, as Honorable De Beer was saying, I think we need to start to ask the Department of Basic Education what is its strategy and how it is going to deal specifically with that strategy. You have raised the issue around the 50% spending patterns. I hope I've understood you well. I think what the committee has recommended was to say at the end of 6 months, provinces' spending must be at least at 50%. Right. And what we are indicating is to say it is difficult to have that hard and fast rule because some provinces will move faster, say, for example, with infrastructure spending. Now, if you want to bind them to a rule, it may retard performance as it relates basically to that. So it becomes difficult to have that. But we use it as a benchmark just to get a sense whether performance of the province is on track. So if they are far below 50%, we would engage the province as to tell us what is happening here. Even where you sit, it will help you because then you can start to ask, why is your spending at 10% and not close to where we think it would be acceptable in terms of that. Honorable Van Rooyen, I think the point that you've raised around the cost of services relates specifically with, I think, the education component part in the previous discussion, if I understood you correctly. We've done quite a bit of detailed work, and my sense is possibly moving forward, we need to, because the formula itself is a dynamic formula. Maybe what we need to possibly do is, based on what you said, to do further detail. We've done detailed work, but maybe just to do further detailed work and come back to the committee for the next budget to say, this is the detailed work that we've done and actually demonstrate to the committee the detailed work that we've done. Some elements that we're possibly taking on board, some elements that we don't take on board and reasons why we don't take it on board. And then out of that, you could have quite a bit of an informed thing. And what we may want to consider doing is, in fact, even before we finalize quite a lot of the work, we may want to prioritize it so that by the time we get to the adjusted division of revenue bill, we could actually come back to the committee and say we've done the work up to this point and give you feedback actually around it to satisfy you on that. On the Free State issue, it is cast in stone, basically. Let me explain it. If the Free State gets, say, R1 billion of the infrastructure grant to provinces, the Free State will not get less than R1 billion. It will still get its billion. The difference is 40% of that will go for education, 40% will go for roads, and 20% will go for health at the end of the day. Now, the province may have budgeted 60% for roads and 20% for education and et cetera. Right? Now, we needed to find an objective way to create the baselines, basically, for the provinces. In your case, it is unique. But I would urge you to actually engage the Department of Transport in the province and exactly ask them, what is the problem of roads in the province? And you will be startled. The problem is not the 40%. The problem is decisions that they have taken. And now these decisions, they've committed the future. And they will not be able to deal with the commitment that they've put in the future. So there is that dynamic that's actually coming into play in the province there. On the school's infrastructure, I'll touch on it because a number of questions have been raised actually around it there. Now, if members can recall, 3 years ago we have added 2.7 billion rand, Honorable Chair, precisely to deal with these backlogs, right? Now, some of the funds is still within those education infrastructure grants. The Eastern Cape got the lion's share of that 2.7 billion, which we haven't taken away from the Eastern Cape. It is still basically with the Eastern Cape. Now, we're adding this amount, and here the Department of Basic Education has done quite detailed work on its National Infrastructure Education Management System, NIMS. And out of there, there is a sense of what is the backlog and how it is spread basically across the provinces. And what we've done, we've used that specific information
to come to the 8.2 billion that we have. So technically, what we have to deal with that specific problem is 8.2 billion and 2.7 billion actually in the past. That is actually in the system for them to deal with that. Now, maybe we shouldn't be using the term mud school. I think we should use the term unsafe structures. I think, and we may want to use it universally across to address your specific point, because it may create unnecessary expectations around mud schools that are actually in good order for that matter. Now, the 8.2 billion is quite far larger than what the need is to deal with that, to bring those schools in up to the right kind of functionality. It is relatively large. So here we are not only saying address those unsafe structures, but address them in such a way that we bring them up to a specific level of functionality, which would include having a lab, all of the other infrastructure that would be needed as it relates to school. We don't want you to go and add 3 or 4 classrooms and move away, but we also want you to address quite a number of the other aspects of the education system as it relates basically to that. Now, we shouldn't look at the 8.2 and the 2.7 billion in that kind of isolation. We also need to look at the 16 billion rand that is already in provincial baselines for education infrastructure, because the two need to be taken together, because the 16 billion will address the entire need for the 26,000 schools that are actually within the system. Now, it is within... Now, we've made quite a bit of progress, by the way, and Gauteng has led the way on this, Mustafa. If you can remember, in your province, at some point it cost close to 100 million rand to build a school, if you can remember. And you have really, I mean, they've done extensive work as it relates to norms and standards for the school, up to a point where they've quantified how much a school should cost, which comes to close to 28 million per school, for, I think, over 30 classrooms, with all of the other things that are actually needed, basically, just for that specific school, which means there's quite sizable savings that are actually happening within the province to be able to accelerate the entire program. Now, Honorable Sogoni, to answer your sports facilities issue, because it is within the purview of the Provincial Department of Education to decide how it is going to roll out its infrastructure program. And within that, they need to also address the issue around sports facilities. I don't think they would need quite a bit of an additional allocation to deal with it at this stage. The need may be there, but at this stage, I don't think so. Now, let me explain to you why I say so. Yeah, I'm from Annadale, Mr. Bas, so I know that area very well. You go there, the grass is tall. As tall as a jungle, you think you are Tarzan when you get there. and simple things actually need to be done if you think about it. If you devolve some of the responsibilities even to governing body level to be able to start to address some of these things, you'll find that you'll be able to accelerate quite a bit quickly the maintenance of school and also the rolling out of some of the sporting kind of facilities that are actually needed basically around that. But there needs to be quite a bit of a discussion between the National Department of Education, Basic Education, and the National Department of Sports and Recreation as to what sports strategy do we start to develop as it relates to school sports. And currently there are discussions actually ongoing. But the question is, some schools have got the ground to be able to roll out school infrastructure. And the departments and the provinces just don't do it in that way. But I'm going to answer the rest of the question as it relates to that as we move forward. Wendy later on will talk about the rural roads. She'll also talk about the EDI holdings and the restructuring of that. The honourable member raised the issue around OSD, and I don't know, you said carry over. I didn't quite understand. You say carry over. Is it carry over or carry through cost? Carry over sounds like a pick six in the race. Or the lotto, you know, if you didn't win it, you carry it over. I suppose it is the carry through of it. Yes, yes.
No, I think that's how we organize the MTS. So part of the thing is really, if you pay for the teachers now, X amount, that X amount will be there throughout. So the additions that we put in place provide even for the future years. I hope I've answered your question properly around it there. If you say if they hire or fire more teachers, no, all of that is taken into account. That's the reason why we've made a further adjustment for education, is to take into account the further recruitment of educators moving forward. Now, what needs to happen basically in the future is if the department puts a bid forward to recruit more teachers, it needs to cost it fully, including the cost of a teacher at that point in time, which in any case would include the higher cost that has arisen due to OSD, for example. So it depends how the bid is started. Well, but when we sit in the Treasury now, we will be alive of the fact that we need to get the full cost of a teacher when we want to recruit more teachers and we want to provide funding for new teachers, basically. Mark will talk later on about the 5% of the NTSG. Okay. I've touched on the schools issue that you've asked. The new methods and new allocations. In fact, you've also talked about the teacher remuneration, which I hope I've partly answered. On the two new methods, they are quite fortunate in the sense that you remember they had the MIG cities part that they had, so it's not new money. Now, in addition to the MIG cities, they are now getting directly part of the urban settlement. Before I even get there, we've added about 1.2 billion, if my memory serves incorrectly, for informal settlements, over and above that. So they're already getting part of that is added to those two metros. On top of that, what they are getting is another slice of the human settlement development grant that they're actually getting. So some of those municipalities where they had, I think, MIG, and we'll be able to give you the details, where they had MIG, I think, of about 200-300 million, some of them are now getting 800 million, like, for that. We'll be able to give you the exact amount for Buffalo City and for Mangaung so that you actually get the same, basically. Now, we must actually guard, Honorable Matumela, on the example that you've given of Duncan Village, that we don't want a municipal system where municipalities rely on national government to fund their program, ultimately. We want self-sustained municipalities. That is actually the ideal part of it. Because if you're going to start to, I mean, we will really completely undermine the local government system if we want to add too much money from the national sphere, actually, around it there. So what we want, number one, is they need to fix their billing system. They need to increase their revenue base. There are certain things that they need to do, because if they get too much money from national government, their billing system will collapse even further, because they know Big Brother will be able to provide. And we don't want, actually, that to happen there. Secondly, there's work that we are now currently doing to support those municipalities. And if you cite the Buffalo City example, I mean, the new municipal manager that's currently in Buffalo City is doing now wonders. He's really turning the municipality around. It will take him time to turn the municipality around. Some of the intervention that he's putting in place is precisely to check where wastage has happened. You know, moving money from non-core to core areas and doing certain things. And that is the kind of response that you actually want to the municipality. Now, for the 8 metros, we are currently busy with quite a detailed assessment of these metros, because it touches on the capacity issue that you are raising, Honorable Ramatlakane, whether they will be able to manage the responsibilities that are given actually to them there. Now, the minister yesterday in his speech said, we want to think completely different about how we manage our cities, basically, moving forward. Right? And our cities are engines of growth, but also they are housing quite a large chunk of the poor at the end of the day. And we need to think on how we actually manage them there. Our thinking with the cities is to say, like your Beijing's, your Shanghai's, New York, they must have 20-25-year plans. And they must start to roll out those plans in a strategic kind of way. Part of strategic would be to say, where is the economy of that specific city? Where is it today? What would it look like in 15, 20 years' time? What kind of investments do we have to make now incrementally to actually get it to what it would look like in time? When you talk about its urban settlement, here we're talking land use management in its totality, not only in terms of the indigent who benefit from the housing subsidy, but talking about in its totality, where does Vincent McKinta here, who is quite a wealthy guy, stay relative to the rest of the people in that municipality? So how do we get the integration going? Because we are 16 years down the line, apartheid is still with us. And how do we break that in quite a bit of a sustained way? That is where our thinking is now starting to move towards. That's the reason why we now say we can use transport as a lead sector that starts to determine how development can actually then happen, so that we develop the rest of our cities actually around that. There's the issue around the environment and green cities, climate change as well, which are huge challenges that are actually going to face our cities in the period ahead. So here we're talking about a holistic solution to address the needs of those specific cities. They will need specific capacity. We are currently engaging with the World Bank on that, and we're looking at international experts to be able to help us, to support us to get our cities where we actually want them to be. Just to give you statistics, in Shanghai 30 years ago and Shanghai today are like chalk and cheese. But Shanghai knew where it wanted to be in 30 years' time, and it has planned it accordingly. It took them 5 years to build about 400 kilometers of underground tunnels for their underground rail system. It will take them the next 4 years to actually double it to about 900 kilometers of underground movement of trains and the system. Now, here the honorable member said there's no toy there. But ultimately, what we want is our cities to start to think along those specific lines. Mr. Donaldson earlier this morning spoke about how do we also get small businesses really rejuvenated in these specific cities as well. And part of land use management and part of the city is to start to plan properly so that we make sure that they provide for the small guy as well at the end of the day and get the proper integration as it relates to that going. On the roads, I mean, you will talk about the roads issue there. But what we've done, Honorable Ramatagani, on funds follow function, on the urban settlement, I think I've explained it as it relates to Buffalo City. That is what we've done for all of the metros. So they will have that amount of money to be able to deal with it. But what we also say in the Division of Revenue Bill, should it so happen that a municipality gets accredited, then it means it has got the full function. And if it has got the full function, it would need the funding to be able to execute the function. So how we've reorganized, Honorable Sugon is gone. How we have reorganized the bill is to say, if should that happen, the fund will follow the function, even if it happens mid-year, and we'll follow the letter of the law to be able to make sure that really happens. Basically, now, part of our strategy to have split up the infrastructure grant to provinces into three is precisely to start to address the point that you have raised around the rehabilitation plan for roads, because then it means the Minister of Human Settlement, Minister of Roads, will have a proper handle as to what's happening with the entire road network of national and provincial government as well, but particularly as it relates to provincial government, so that we've got a proper asset management system in place to manage the entire road network for that matter. And once we've got that and we fully understand that, then Honorable Van Rooyen, then the question would be, if we now fully understand the need for provincial roads, then we can think about how we scale it up. But the point that I've made also earlier this morning was we need to address the issue around the fact that in your province it would cost $17 million to build a road, and in another province with the same road, same topography, same specs, it costs 5 or 6 million rand a kilometer. So there is an element of that we need to sort out there. Honorable Rabi, I think on the libraries, we agree with you. You talked to a former school principal there. You know, for me, that is quite important at the end of the day. Current spending is very low on this grant. Very, very low, very disappointing. I think it's about 40% 33.something% was in the last financial year. After December now, we can give you the statistic. It's still also slow. So whilst we agree with you that we need to add more money into it, current spending patterns really suggest quite otherwise. And I think it's something that we need to deal with that. Honourable, so you're talking about the 51% and 48%. But for the record, I'll just explain it quickly. What we have in the equitable share formula, we've got six components. One of the components is education. And education, before we've reorganized the formula, made up 51% of the formula, based on historical expenditure patterns, when we exclude conditional grants, basically, out of that. Now, we've done exactly the same and have seen how much spending is there in education as part of the equitable share. Currently, it is 48%, and that is, we've adjusted the component down to 48%. I must make it clear, it does not mean the amount of money that goes to basic education has gone down. The, relative to the entire pool of money, its share has decreased. But we need to take into account there was always the in health, for example, and quite large, sizable additions that were made to health, for example. So surely health is getting greater emphasis, basically. But if you look at the year-on-year increases for basic education, those allocations are growing still, basically, moving forward. I think they grow in excess of about 7 or 8% moving forward. So education budgets are growing. They are actually not decreasing. I presume, Honorable De Beer, you made comments about the role that you can play to enhance accreditation. Where are we now? The Minister of Human Settlements has signed performance agreement with the President that at the end of 2014 he would have accredited 24 municipalities that have got a demonstrative capacity to deliver on human settlements. Now, the power to accredit does not lie with the Minister of Human Settlements. It actually lies with the MEC for Local Government in the province. So it is for the MEC for Local Government in the province actually to accredit that specific municipality. So what the Department of Human Settlements have done, they have done detailed assessments of all of the municipalities that they think need to be accredited there. And they are fairly convinced that these municipalities actually need to get to level 3 accreditation at the end of the day. Now, you're going to have some provinces that will move with accreditation and others will not move necessarily with accreditation. Indications from the Northern Cape, for example, is because they're using district municipalities to deliver. And they're thinking of accrediting those district municipalities to deliver that specific service. In the Western Cape, there is talk that the city of Cape Town may get full accreditation, basically, as it relates to that function. So there is a mixed bag on how you're going to deal, basically, with that. Honorable Sobhani, asked the last question there around the new grant. The reconfiguration of the infrastructure grant to provinces, it is not as if it is a new grant. So the education department, road departments, in any case, they needed to have had their plans going. It's not new. It's just a reconfiguration of the grant. So they need to continue with their spending plan, basically. The reconfiguration of the urban settlement development grant is relatively something new, and we're engaging all of the metros that are getting the grant. We are fortunate in the sense that we've got time because they will only be implementing it from 1 July moving forward. And part of our engagement, Honorable Chair, with those particular metro municipalities is that they need to get it into their IDP system, they need to get it onto their budget. So all of those engagements are indeed happening. And with the support that we will be giving them with our engagement with the World Bank, we are confident that they will actually move quite swiftly on it. Honorable Chair, yourself, you have raised the issue around some of the discrepancies in the presentation, as we have updated, I think the presentation has updated the thing. What I would possibly suggest, Chair, with your permission, is if you could highlight where we've got those discrepancies, then we can give you a specific updated report, basically, as it relates to that. I think that could be useful. You want to just add to that? But thank you for those words.
the report that's submitted in the budget review is formal report that was submitted in terms of the parliamentary process, which was done around May, June this year. What the presentation slide intended to do is because a lot of, if you look at those recommendations, it says it will be referred into the budget process. At that stage, the budget process was still in process. The budget process has now been concluded. So what the slide presentation does is actually, based on that report, what has happened since then. So what this is given is actually an updated report. So, for example, if you look at the report attached, and this is just to indicate what was submitted to Parliament, it indicates, for example, on the school issue that it will be referred to WinCombat and to the relevant minister responsible for that function. What the updated slides indicates actually what has been made available. That matter was referred to WinCombat. It was then a proposal that came out of the budget process.
But I think the concern of the chair is valid. What we need to do is to update actually the report to reflect those specific changes. I think that is the best. But it's fine. I mean, we can take it up with the chair.
Okay, just thank you, Honourable Chairperson, members. I'll be very brief. Just on the question of the 5%, conditional grants are really a relationship between a national department and the provincial department, and both sides need to play their part in that relationship. The national department can provide guidelines, can provide support, training, do provincial visits and so on, and that can work well, you know, for many of the provinces or most of the provinces, but you get to a situation where certain provinces are persistently non-compliant and very badly so, and non-cooperative. And you get cases, for example, where a province persistently uses a grant not for the intended purpose, and they refuse to change. And you get a province that persistently refuses to submit a business plan. And you get a province that persistently submits absolutely useless data that doesn't show any useful data to how they're performing. Now, you get a national department then year after year trying to struggle with this problem, and it's really been actually overdue that we make the reform. The proposed reform is really very, very mild. It's a very mild sanction. It's a temporary withhold of up to 5%, which is a small amount. It's saying, do the things you need to do, and then the funding will flow. I think it's just the minimum needed to try and put some a sensible governance back to some of these grants. There's been some serious problems in some of these grants. Chair, on the OSDs, I don't want to talk long enough because it's quite a long discussion, but I think the committee probably is aware that, and our minister has certainly been stressing it, that personnel expenditure really has been squeezing out other items of expenditure. And we see it sort now in the benchmark exercises again this year when we met with the 9 provincial treasuries. That again in budget 2011, personnel spending in the 9 provinces is squeezing out other expenditure. In health, it's squeezing out medicines, it's squeezing out maintenance, it's squeezing out laboratory services, et cetera, et cetera. Personnel expenditure in health has more or less doubled in the last 3 or 4 years, from about 30 to 60 billion. I think our minister is making the point very, very strongly that we need to hold personnel expenditure now. We cannot continue simply adding more and more OSDs and more high salary increases. We have to look at those complementary inputs, which are absolutely critical for our functions. You know, there's talk in some of the sectors of wanting to go back to more OSDs, to reopen OSDs, to do more OSDs, to go back. And I think we have to really realize that, you know, there are many parts that go to making personnel happy. It's not only salaries. Chief, I could also just mention that one bit of good news is that the health sector in the 3 years to December employed 35,000 additional posts. And they will soon, they're now 292,000 employees. They're going to soon top 300,000 employees. So that's generally good that we're stepping up posts. Some years ago we had 200,000 posts in the health sector. We're soon going to top 300,000. That's obviously also been pushing personnel expenditure and also contribute to some extent to the issue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think all the
questions have been answered adequately. Okay. 2 minutes.
Less than that, thank you. And there were two questions on transport as well that I'll quickly just deal with as well. With regard to EDR Holdings, the staff has, in terms of what I've been informed, and I can follow up with the Department of Energy as well, but the EDR Holdings staff has been incorporated into the National Department of Education, Energy, and they will be redeployed to do other staff. Evidently, one of the issues that's, and that is important to note as well, is that although the rates have been abolished, the issues and the problems that in India, such as electricity distribution, such as lack of maintenance and infrastructure and the like, is still a problem, and that still needs to be addressed. They most probably are currently still dealing with those types of issues, but we will be monitoring that as part of our responsibilities as well. Then just the question about the public transport and its transfer to larger municipalities and how that will be done and when it will be done. It's important to note that when a function gets devolved or public transport gets devolved to a municipality, a municipality cannot just take certain components of that function. It must take the full function and all that goes with it, which is important, which includes the functions that's currently performed by provinces with regard to the bus subsidies. So what needs to be done is a full costing assessment of that, and that work is undergoing. The National Department of Transport is currently in consultation with the respective municipalities to do that. It's quite a lengthy process, so it's unlikely that the function will be devolved in 2011-12. It's most probably likely to happen in future years. Then with regard to the rural transport queries, if you can go to page 171 of the Division of Revenue Bill, it's got the conditional grant framework for the Rural Transport Services and Infrastructure Grant. And important is that the grant framework is actually the development of the National Department of Transport. And if you look at the grant purpose, it's stipulated to assist rural municipalities to step up rural road asset management systems and collect road and traffic data in line with the road infrastructure strategic framework for South Africa. It's one thing to have data available. It's another thing to actually convert that into actual expenditure in ensuring that that takes place. So the whole idea is actually to get not just the data, but also to put in place the systems to actually ensure that roads are maintained. This is indeed a job that the National Department of Transport will be taking forward.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brown and the team. I think we have exhausted all the questions now. If there are still any follow-ups, particularly from provinces, I think we will take the opportunity as and when we will visit, invite Treasury as we do the briefings in the provinces in a week's time. So, honourable members, we're running a little bit late. We had hoped that we would close this meeting at 4:30. But with your permission, I just checked with the FFC. They could be able to make their presentation in 20 minutes' time because my intention is to at least wrap up and close this meeting at 4:45 so that we allow members to go and get their stuff in the offices because we did not arrange for transport as we never anticipated that this meeting would be this long. So, but that then means that after FFC, we will not have a session for questions. Do you agree, Honourable Member? FFC?
That's case,
Chairperson, I'll take 5 minutes basically to raise a few points that I just want to highlight here.
Okay.
I'm probably going to deviate from the presentation that I had prepared. I think it's very much to the point.
Mr. Nogada, can you not disturb Treasury? I think it's important that Mr. Brown, I would request that if you can just stay for the presentation. Yeah. I see the secretary is you may proceed, sir.
Okay, Honorable Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to at least share some of the views from the Commission. Let me just start off by indicating that this submission is made in terms of legislation. It's made in terms of Section 9 of the IGFRA.
Yes.
And I think the National Treasury presentation has been quite comprehensive. And in terms of the recommendations of the Commission that we made, they've highlighted discussions that have taken place, and I think they've actually reflected what happened exactly. We also took the time to go to the provinces, and I'm very happy to report today that we managed to actually address all the provinces outside of the province of Limpopo, but we just ran out of time with them. We are still to discuss some of the issues with them tomorrow. And therefore, we also managed to speak to a number of the provincial treasuries around our recommendations as well. And so I think in terms of the consultation processes around this, the process was very good compared to the last 6 or so years. So with that in mind, I must say that in terms of our recommendations, the Commission's concerns, I'll say the Division of Revenue Bill itself, we are quite happy with the changes that have actually been made in terms of refocusing it to be a more strategic kind of a document which seeks to complement the objectives of government, whilst also keeping the constitutional principles that are listed in Section 2142A2J, the 10 criteria that are there, I think are very important, but you also need to balance those with the priorities of government and make sure that the bill actually does speak to both, rather than just using it as an instrument for allocating resources and then walking away without building in accountability issues. And I think it's important in that regard to say that in terms of what we had recommended, I'm saying this because the Commission's recommendations are not necessarily meant for the following year's Division of Revenue. They basically take into account the medium-term expenditure framework and that. So if I go back to 2007, 2008, we started making recommendations around improving the administration of public services, especially in health and education with respect to provinces, and also improving the quality of services, and also putting more money and prioritizing some of the complementary inputs and moving away from the kind of personnel driven kind of budget. And what we have picked up in the last year is that there has been some overspending in these areas, but in terms of the outputs, what is actually coming out of there in terms of service delivery, we're not actually getting the kind of quality that one is expecting, and therefore the Commission is a bit concerned around those kinds of areas. The second aspect around these sectoral challenges is that where there seems to be some delivery failures, there's now been a tendency to set up special purpose kinds of agencies or vehicles to try and deal with those types of problems. And here the Commission would like to raise a point that it is important to learn from some of the agencies that we have actually put in place to try and deal with the problem, starting, for example, with the South African Social Security Agency, of which the Commission was quite instrumental in pushing for an establishment of such kind of an institution. But we need to actually draw some lessons from that. And more recently and more importantly, the issue of the EDI holdings, which basically was to deal with the inefficiencies in the distribution of electricity. And obviously, this discussion is a discussion that National Treasury have made a response to the Commission on. As a Commission, we basically have a feeling that the response that was given probably needed to be more direct in terms of what the recommendation was about. The recommendation was about dealing with service delivery failures and how you then address those inefficiencies. And if you can establish an institution, and because it's not only electricity, and as she says, the problem is still not resolved. There could be water again coming up, and so all of those issues, we need to adopt certain principles around how we deal with those types of principles, rather than establishing agencies outside of the system to deal with internal problems. The other area that the Commission would like to highlight basically is in the area of built environment. I think there's quite a lot of money that is going into that, and there's been quite a lot of changes in terms of the funding arrangements going in, especially as it relates to the conditional grants. And the Commission would basically view that as an opportunity to address some of the problems that we actually have, and also an opportunity to deal with some of the problems around job creation. And therefore, this is an area that the Commission would like to highlight for Parliament to actually keep a very close eye on what is actually happening. It is interesting to note that the issue around accreditation is actually receiving attention now, and probably if one looks back to when this issue started and from when the Commission started making this recommendation, and I'm very happy to hear that some committee members are actually raising the issue of the role of Parliament in all of this, because our recommendations are made to Parliament. And if Parliament basically accepts the recommendations as making sense, we would actually want to see a more activist response in terms of how they are actually then implemented. And we're quite happy that the enabling legislation for that is now in place. And also the Division of Revenue Bill, as it looks this year, actually tried to address some of these issues in a very direct way by incorporating clauses to deal with these stalling processes. The third area is the area around the review of the revenue sharing formula. I think it would be amiss of me to not mention anything around this. The issue around the revenue sharing formula, basically, what I think is important to note is that there are, obviously, when you conduct a review, there will be winners and losers. And what we think as the Commission is that there has been quite a substantial progress made in terms of reviewing the provincial equitable share formula. In particular, we identified the work that was done in the health sector, looking at the health component, and also looking at how it begins to respond to the needs of the sector itself. So the way in which the health component has been reviewed basically for us is quite instructive in terms of what can be done if the need for data is actually created. What some of the members are raising is a very important point around the reliance of this formulae on population data. Now, from where we sit, we have actually tested the degree to which this formula relies on population data, and the provincial equitable share formula was about 97%. Now, if you look at the kind of data that feeds into that formula, and you're looking at 97% explaining the allocations, then there's a serious problem. Irrespective of how you actually try and normalize these kinds of things with different types of weightings to perform certain changes, there is a need for us to look at how we can actually dilute the level at which these formulas depend on population. Given the 11-year time frame for census data, it's even more important at the local government level, where you are targeting people and where they are and where they live. So the migration patterns basically can be quite disastrous. One shudders to think what will happen once the new population, once the new census results are out there and we have to update this, if we haven't actually done anything to deal with that particular problem. So I will leave that as work that we have to do. I think in our discussions with the National Treasury, representing government, I suppose, we have agreed that we need to revisit some of the work that has been done in the past and also relook at how government has structured itself in terms of service delivery, because the formulas were developed at a particular point in time. Service delivery model for government was different from what it is now. So we need to be responsive to that, since the formula is just an instrument. It's not the objective. It's a means to achieve certain objectives, and we need to take a bold view to say how do we actually review this to take into consideration the changes that have happened. The final point is on. I'm not going to talk about government's response to our recommendations, because they have actually gone into very details. And in our written submission, you will find our detailed response to what they've violated. Let me just the final point relates to municipal revenue and fiscal decentralization. We are aware of certain moves by some municipalities to actually introduce new taxes, and that in general should be encouraged, but we should also not be looking at introducing new revenue sources when we can't actually utilize what we currently have. So whatever happens in that area, we will be looking at the developments as a commission and evaluating those kinds of developments in accordance with that. So let me stop here, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khumalo. I think we'll engage further, Honourable Member Swift's submission, in the coming public hearings. Next week will be both Select Committee and Standing Committee on Finance. We'll be having public hearings, and with the Select Committee, we'll call public hearings on the 22nd and 23rd of March. And I think at that time, Mr. Khumalo would meet you so that we can be able to follow up on some of the things that you have raised to get more clarity. But that will be communicated to you in advance. I'm sure the same will happen with the Standing Committee on Appropriations in the LA. I'm not yet sure of their dates for public hearings. The chairperson will give direction on that. And I forgot to present the apology of Honorable Sokoni. He had to run to another meeting that was scheduled for 4 because he was hoping that it would have finished by then. So I accepted his apology, Honorable Member. And let me take this opportunity to thank you, Mr. Brown, and the team for a detailed presentation, and also to indicate that between the 11th and the 16th of March, we'll be, from the NCOP side, we'll be doing a briefing in provinces, but we'll formally communicate that with yourself so that where necessary we get your backup to provinces, as it has been the tradition. And I hope provincial chairs which are here will also in the meantime share information that they have received from here with provinces so that we make such meetings easy ones. And on that note, I wish to thank you and the FFC, Mr. Kumal and your team, for being here, and we'll interact further with yourself. Thank you very much, Honourable Member. This meeting is held at 30.